off the record, I was saying to my colleague, Honorable Shin, that I think IT conference, you should put white middle aged males on the appendix one. On page 68, in terms of your equity targets, on the first and the second graph, you know, I know we live in a patriarchal society, but male and male. Perhaps there's an error there. One of them should be female, and which one is it? And then you've listed the composition, but there are no targets. Do you have any equity targets that you could, in the future, perhaps put against those numbers, just so we can get a snapshot of where we are there? On page 97, just under the notes on general expenses, I see your catering went from 345,000 to 829,000. And there was also a reference made somewhere in the annual report to some sort of catering contract, but the number was relatively insignificant compared to that. Why the more than doubling for catering refreshments and domestic services? It's about 58% increase. Then a BDM capacity building of 14, almost 15 million rand. Can you just tell me what that item refers to, please? You know, CEO, just on a lighthearted note, in the answers you gave me, you mentioned the try a lot of times. And there's always this scene in the first Star Wars film where Yoda and the young Luke Skywalker are standing in the swamp, and there's the aircraft in the swamp. And he says, lift it with your mind. And he says, I'm trying. And Yoda says to him, do or do not, there is no try. I hope you're going to do it. And that's in relation to your ERP and your organizational development. Your size penalties and interest for 84,000. Again, investigations will be conducted and corrective actions taken. Have those investigations been concluded? And this just speaks to, I think, consequence management generally. Spoke to the people leaving the agency. Is there a process, just as a matter of interest, where people, you know, sort of do things at your company or any company in government service and then leave and then join another entity? Other than a reference check, perhaps there's no mark against their name or anything else. No, we don't do that. Then 124. No, I won't. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you,
Chairperson. Mr. President, Peter, for the second round of questions, the follow-up, Peter, then.
Chairperson, thank you. I also saw that little note on sound, but I see there were some tough negotiations and stuff waived the penalty. Is that true? That's on page 101. The interest. As far as, and you know, it's always like this, that you have an incoming a group of people who are very enthusiastic and want to clean up, etc., and that you are confronted with whatever happened in the past. And we understand your level of frustration. But I think the general comment that I just wanted to make, Chair, with your permission, is that for as long as we as a committee can feel that there is a genuine commitment to clean up the operation, to ensure that you fulfill your mandate as is envisaged, I think, you know, that would be understandable. But the comment is just that, unfortunately, human nature is such that unless you follow through on some of the nasty things as well, You know, it's not nice to follow up and see, you know, employees, for instance, leaving when they have their traffic fines. They still have outstanding traffic fines. There must be a system to pick up so that it can be deducted very soon. And I would like to suggest that the CFO finds out where and how can that be done. Because ultimately, in the public sector, it is important for us to ensure that those who are flouting the rules must face the consequences of their decisions. And as a person who very often finds myself on the wrong with traffic fines, I have to pay my own. Nobody is going to do it on my behalf, and I don't think it's correct that those officials are using the public vehicle and then they don't accept the responsibility that goes with it. So just a general statement to say we wish you luck, but please make sure that you don't relax after having been presenting to the committee. Now you can relax, it's all over. You only have to face us months from now, you know, now you can let go. Please don't do that. Because ultimately what happens between now and the next time we engage would have to show to us that there's also follow through on your commitment. Thank you, Chair.
Also, I have one question here. Let me start by apologizing for the second part of my question about the CFO, that you explain what you mean by advanced stage. But I think the reporting is some kind of a cut and paste. What I answer to be like the one on the CEO. You say now we have the CEO setting up of this day. So it was sort of a misleading gatekeeper entry. I apologize. It's mandatory for us today. But yeah. But I think in future it should be a written that we have a new person now. Usually when information is missing from a particular case, we have an extra case to explain the information to And but my concern then about the pace of your feeling the people or both in general. And with your commitment here regarding the aid spending that you'll implement a general strategy to respond to this one, with the pace given here, do you think you have capacity to implement within the set time frame that will be taken, but you don't have it now? But the capacity that we have, do you think we'll be able to implement the anticipated terror strategy? That's all from me.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask you all. Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Or thank you, Chair. Can I say that? I'm going to ask the CEO to cover the questions together with the executive.
Same check, can I? Oh,
Well, thanks, sir. It was not necessary to start, but I was signaling my intention to speak. But anyway, I just really wanted to appreciate the words from one of the senior. We really, just to reiterate, the CEO answered this question himself the first time around, and I felt that it might be important also coming from ourselves as the board. The CEO has our full and unwavering support. Before he came here, we spent a lot of time grappling with and trying to understand and trying to get to the bottom of all the things that are always out there being said about the SASSA. The chair earlier on spoke about all the processes, including the process of the investigation that we are engaging with the Minister of Communications on. We have a meeting tomorrow that we spoke about. Members spoke a lot about the issue of consequence management. It is indeed a matter that is of great, great concern to us, and we have mandated the CEO, in fact, we have said to him that he must ensure that he prioritizes this matter, exactly as you are saying, Honourable Member, because we would not really like to have to come back here and still be talking the same kind of language around these matters. Unfortunately, the other Honourable Member asked a question about whether there's a process that can be followed for people who do wrong things and then on the verge of having to account for and being held accountable for having done wrong things, they run away. You know, in my previous life, in another organization, I actually tested this. It's a very difficult and painful thing, because I actually charged a person who had resigned from the organization, and I tested it legally. Unfortunately, legally, a resignation is a unilateral act. A person has, once they resign, other than you laying criminal charges to the extent that they are. And then, of course, unfortunately, with the challenges we have on that side of things as well, that's usually the last you ever hear of it. So, unfortunately, there is usually not much you can do. Say, perhaps, I know that SCOPA, because for my sins I've also appeared before SCOPA, SCOPA would generally ask entities to give them names of such people who have left under a cloud on suspicion of this and the other, so that they themselves as SCOPA in their own right as members of parliament can then check if they reappear elsewhere in the system. But from yourself as an entity, there's usually not much you can do. Mm-hmm. But really, I just wanted to emphasize the point that the CEO has our full backing and support, and indeed we will hold him accountable if these matters are not getting attended to. Thank you.
Can I ask the finance team to actually answer the other questions around finance?
Thank you, Chair. The questions relating to finance, I would start with the question on employee wellness expenditure going high in the year under review compared to the previous year, and also the catering, refreshments, and domestic services. For the employee wellness, the previous financial year, we did not have a service provider who was assisting USASA with the employee wellness program. So the expenditure there of 53,000 was basically on activities related to employee wellness. But in the following financial year, which is the one under review, a service provider was appointed, and we got to pay the service provider on a monthly basis relating to the employee wellness program. And for catering, refreshments, and domestic services, these are basically refreshments that the employees use at the offices, and cleaning materials also to keep the place hygienic. For the year under review, we had the consultants that were coming through to assist us with the ERP system. It was a big number of people. It was basically almost same size as our employees at the head office. As a result, our refreshments and the domestic services expenditure got to go high during the time that they were there. But once we picked this high expenditure, we also engaged the service provider to say they should also come with their own refreshments, so that we it's not only USASA that gets to carry the cost for them while they are developing the ERP system. On the BDM capacity building, this 14.8 million is basically the BDM logistic and distribution costs that we pay to support for them to assist us with the logistical cost. Lastly, the SARS penalty and interest. As I had indicated before, that we had challenges at year end on change of signatories at our bank. This penalty on SARS is actually penalty on late payment of PSUN. We had to incur this penalty because we couldn't pay SARS on time. We basically paid them a managed to pay them a day after, and the penalty and interest there was what is currently disclosed. Thank you very much.
Thanks. The last few left is personal equity targets. We have just finalized the strategy and plan, and as a year under review, there wasn't set targets, and that's why the report is like that. But we're finalizing that now. And I note that error of mail is made. I think the second a table. Yes, the second we yes. And then on the
the first or the second huge, first or second female.
The second is female. Yes. Then on the page of the link we can see everything. And you can see from just a few months we've been able to fill the keyboard since finance, common secretary. Even the finance process of not only as we had to go through cabinet, but we've been able to fast track. So we've improved there and we commit to want to finalize the OD to just make sure that we quickly capacitate ourselves having regard to the challenges that we need to resolve and the capacity needs that skills that we need in order to implement and achieve our ATP. In terms of the audit plan, already we've identified in the action plan who was responsible for actioning what. We will be discussing the detail of the plan with the audit committee hopefully this week. Where then we will agree on the deadlines beyond the ones that we have committed to AG. Some of the actions we've already delivered on. The ones that could drag is those that relate to consequence management due to all the other considerations that have to be taken into account. Indeed, the commitment is genuine. We have no options. We can't be proud of the unqualified report with this number of findings and the internal control deficiencies. My history in public service has never been to preside over this, so I wouldn't be proud of this. So the commitment is there, and with the support from the board, I think the audit committee is quite very prudent, and they also put very tough actions that need to be taken, and we're committed to that. So definitely when we come back we should have a better presentation reflecting progress at least into the future. Our target is indeed a clean audit.
Thank you. Just to cement what the CEO is saying as well, Madam Killian, I couldn't stop talking because of the passion we as board CEO we have around getting USASA to completely, from a staff point of view, number one, to actually really they reflect the ICT nature, even in terms of the dynamic nature of the staff. And we know it is not going to be like tomorrow, but quick wins are very important for us. The biggest quick win we've had, because part of change management has to do with actually putting agency and making change being actualized. So at the beginning, what we did is we did something completely different, which was never done before. That of before the strategy, quickly a dashboard survey is done to check the status of the relation and in terms of feelings of people around certain issues. There was a clustering of issues in terms of that key areas that we had to look at. But secondly, when strategy was done, strategy formulation, it was a top down, it was a bottom up. So everybody got involved, from a helper, sort of a security got involved for them to, because their jobs, they intertwine to make a big job being what it is. Without those people, then really there's going to be missing legs. So the CEO got everybody involved, and they went to the sort of not very far from the company, just to cost containment as well, facilitated discussions, getting staff to talk issues. Mm-hmm. And that was a good process. And out of that, a facilitator was involved with that, gave us that feedback at the board to say, this is how the staff is feeling, and do what you think. So the conceptualization of the strategy was out of that, and something really. So everybody seeing that you know, this is interesting. Now, this is one part of it. But the second part is to go back to staff in terms of the new annual plan and to centralize that, get them contracted in terms of the smart lenses you were talking about. That already has been done in final level, right after making money. So because we are seeing the speed in terms of how we can think. So from a point of internal organizational issues there, the CEO really, as a board, we are going to support him to change the culture, to really, because part of facilitators, it has to do with making people really see the need for them to be there. It's not like, as usual, you know, come to work and go home. You know, so I think that culture that CEO is going to make happen. And part of that, it has to do with the presence of executives in the company, you know, and they deal with staff on issues. And then we deal with these big elephants in terms of BDM and so on. Hopefully, those are resolved. In the total of things, if everything goes well, I think we're setting ourselves really in terms of, you know, changing the mode of that transition, in terms of the mandate that we hope to deliver to the people out there. You know, because we're all there, the driver in our hearts, in our minds, and what we want to implant in terms of the legacies that we want to put there, it must impact the people out there positively. And that's what we're looking at. And that just is not in terms of numbers. It can have 60 numbers, but if you look at the societal impact that it has, you know, it's far greater than what it is. And as both would realize that. So I just wanted to say that, I mean, to invent what you're saying, because you said what you're saying for the second time. So really, we are emphasizing how important it is that our intention is genuine. And really, we get things done in terms of what we're here for. So we promise that
the next one.
Yes, So what thing were you guys from? What company?
Oh, USASA.
What do they stand for?
Universal.
Okay. How do you even spell
USASA.
Okay. Universal.
Universal Service.
Okay. Service.
And Access Agency of South Africa.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Acting Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, may I start by introducing myself? I am the new chairperson of the board, and that position was from the beginning of October. A new board was appointed by Cabinet at the end of September, right at the end, and a few days later the board had to take over its responsibilities, the new board. We actually would have loved to have the chairperson of the board that acted until that stage here at this occasion also to put the chairperson's report, but he can unfortunately not be here. I'm referring to Mr. Tommy Kaplai. Perhaps just, if I may, before I introduce the members of the delegation here, if I may just introduce myself. I said my name is Walter Klaassen. I was involved in higher education over many years at whole academic life around Stellenbosch University in management, and afterwards became involved in issues around information systems and e-skills development. At university level, also in terms of the national initiative in terms of e-skills development, it's an area about which I personally am excited, and I feel very honored to be involved with NAMESA and also in the position as chair of the board. May I then please introduce the other members of our delegation? Mr. Lucas Mello is the chairperson of the Board Audit and Risk Management Committee. Mr. Peter Ramatswana is the acting CEO, and Ms. Lufunwa Ligege is the acting CFO. These are the members. Then, on behalf of the board, I would just like to express right at this stage again our appreciation for the fact that we may serve in this position as the board, and for the opportunities entrusted to us in this regard. We are, as a board, may I say, aware of the responsibilities relating to this function, crucial responsibilities in a time when everybody is linking the word digital in some or other way to whatever they do or where they want to go. And that doesn't come automatically by just using the word. It's all about skills. We realize the importance of that. We also realize that these capabilities should not be limited to people who had privileges in the past, but to everybody. It's an essence to get access for everybody to the possibilities of digital society. We have confidence from the side of the board that we will be able to meet the challenges in this regard. If I may then proceed to the report, Chairperson, this is then the annual performance, the presentation on the annual report. And firstly, just a few general remarks. It is very important for us to indicate that, firstly, that is on behalf of the acting chairperson, as I said, that this is reported. And important for us to say at this point that an unqualified audit finding from the Auditor General was achieved. That is very important for the board to highlight that position specifically. At the same time, we also wish to express and support our appreciation for the support and the really consistent cooperation from the shareholder in order to help us move forward with this agenda. If I say the agenda of NAMESA, due to a decision already 2 years ago, moving forward doesn't mean doing business as usual only. Yes, we have to do that as well, but it also means moving forward with a new agenda. This is an organization in transition, and we need special support from the shareholder. We get that. We then confirm our commitment as a board, and we hope that we will not disappoint on this mandate. The physical presence, as you know, of NAMESA is not in one place only. It's countrywide in more than one respect. Firstly, the current running training activities have got a presence not only in Johannesburg, where the headquarters are, but there's a physical presence in a number of provinces regarding training for NAMESA qualifications. And then important, there is a presence of co-labs that are well established already, not new activities, but co-labs that are well established in Limpopo, the University of Limpopo, at the University of the Western Cape, at Walter Sisulu University, Durban University of Technology, and Laval University of Technology. An allocation that has been made to 11.3 million rand towards the co-labs. It is a highly effective way of doing the kind of interventions regarding digital skills that must be done. It's not about going into a community only, occasionally yes, but not only going in, doing the training and disappearing. It's about handholding, it's about support, it's about enabling local organizations, government organizations, NGOs, etc., to be able to do the digital skills development in that community. The co-labs have now been expanded to the Free State, to Mpumalanga and Northwest Province. Those co-labs are in initial stages of activity and finding their way. And for that purpose, they get the support from NAMESA. Overall, it was an exciting year for NAMESA. It will certainly be an exciting year forward as well, but the past year had its challenges in many respects, but those challenges were in fact mastered, and again there we need to thank the shareholder very much for their support in doing it, and also all the members of staff for taking on roles which they in January of this year did not know they would have to take. You would have seen the word acting in three places in the leadership of this organization, but those roles were indeed enacted in such a way that we can say it was an exciting year, and we know there are milestones that were achieved despite these challenges. So I would like to hand over to the acting CEO for the rest of the report, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Acting Chair and Honorable Members. It is my pleasure and honor to present the overview of the NAMESA Annual Performance Report for the year 2015-16. I do want to highlight some of the key achievements for the year under review. We have been able to expand quite a number of our programs to ensure that we are fully aligned to the SA Connect policy in particular, the NDP in particular, in terms of ensuring that we realize the ultimate goal of ensuring that we skill the nation. It is quite a huge task, and we are of the view that obviously the collaboration is quite key and fundamental for us to be able to achieve the goal. I'm also happy, Chair, to indicate the fact that in the past year we've been able to pilot and try a model that is ensuring us to reach out to more communities than before, which is a blended model of learning. Not only is it blended in the sense that it encompasses both face-to-face and online training, but the model itself has been able to ensure that students access the workplace. In other words, as we train them, they spend 3 weeks at the workplace and a week with us in terms of the training. That model has proved to work very effectively. We have seen this model being tried in about 5 provinces, being Gauteng, Mpumalanga, KZN, Eastern Cape and Northern Cape in the previous year. And we're happy to indicate that we have had a huge success in terms of trying this model of blended learning, and we think it's the way to go in terms of ensuring that we reach out to as many people as possible as we can, particularly our people in the rural parts of the communities, whether it's in Colesberg or Port Ada, whether it's in Ngungundlovu or it's in Bembe district. We think the model is the right way to go in terms of reaching out, and not only to reach out in terms of achieving numbers, but I think it's about making a difference, ensuring that young people are exposed to skills that will enable them either to be employed or to can be able to start their businesses. That's the whole intention and purpose. I'm also happy, Chair, to also indicate the fact that we have seen success in terms of expansion of our collaboration network in various provinces, where we've been partnering with a number of other state entities in KZN, in Eastern Cape, and that also has enabled us to reach out more and more of young people in particular. We're seeing a lot of young women being part of our programs. We've ensured that as we train or reach out to communities, we ensure a proper gender balance. Either we are at 50-50 in terms of the split of male-female, or we are at 60-40%, 60 in favor of females and 40% in favor of males. I do want to indicate the fact that we have also ensured that we also empower SMMEs, as also it's within, of course, the one of the major goals of government to empower SMMEs. We have seen a situation in which our contracts as well have also reached out to SMMEs in which they contracted to work with to ensure that we are able to deliver on what we're supposed to deliver. I do also, Chair, want to indicate that one of our major flagship projects has been a project on digital literacy that we have been delivering through the Vale University of Technology, where we have been able to develop a portal that will enable us to deliver online programs. We're happy to report that the portal has been established, and I think that we're at the stage whereby we're looking at the situation of piloting it. And this portal will enable people to log online and access our programs. And should they wish to be assessed and be certificated, obviously the portal will then enable them to do that in terms of interfacing the portal, and Vale University of Technology has really done extremely well in this instance. We are also happy to highlight the fact that we have had a very successful pilot in terms of what we call a SheConnect project, which we ran in the Limpopo province. This project is specifically focusing on women to empower them, to enable them to access any opportunities that could be derived from the rollout of the broadband. So we trained them on a digital literacy. Our initial target was 400. We were able to see achieving 75% of the target in terms of women that we're training. It is our intention, honorable members, to ensure that we roll it out to other parts of the country, because I think it's quite a very vital and important program that we're running. We are also happy to report among our highlights for the year the success that we've been able to realize in Limpopo specifically. The collab there, which is hosted by Limpopo University, has been able to develop a portal. We call it an e-passion, patient management system. That particular program would then enable an integration of data or information. around patients in clinics in the villages that could be linked to the hospital. And among other things that we're targeting to do is to ensure that we improve the management of the patients accessing of services. Among other things that we're looking at is that the system should enable us to send a reminder either through an SMS to patients to come and pick up their treatment when they are due for it. And also what is quite exciting about this is the fact that no patient will be in a position to access this particular treatment more than once, because the system would be linked and integrated. But secondly and most importantly, it would enable our patients not to be restricted to a particular area. In other words, should you happen to be in Mokopane, for example, and you are effectively residing in Polokwane, you could be able to go to Mokopane because that information will be available at the clinic and pick up your medication without having to go back to Polokwane where you happen to have been registered at the clinic. So for us, it's quite an exciting project. We've been working very, very closely with the Limpopo government, particularly the health department, and it's a project that we think would need to really get our support moving forward and ensure that we actually replicate it in the country. I must also say, Chair, we are also quite happy to indicate the fact that, as the Chair indicated, that we have been able to see ensuring presence in three other provinces. And these provinces are the Free State, and where we're looking at partnering with Central University College, and in Mpumalanga, we are partnering with TUT, Tshwane University of Technology, because of their presence in Mpumalanga, and in Northwest, of course, we have forged partnerships with Northwest University. Chair, if I were to get into the focus of the performance information for the year under review, the Institute has been focusing primarily on five programs as they are stipulated, and I'm happy that we have really made good strides in terms of our achievements, particularly around program 2, 3, and 4, if you look at where most of our achievements have been registered. Overall, in terms of our performance, Chair and the Honourable Members, we are happy to report an achievement of 78.7% performance and non-achievement of 21.3% in terms of the overall performance of the Institute. I do also want to highlight, however, that we've had our challenges in terms of non-achievement. We've had the fees must fall impact has impacted on our delivery because most of our collabs happen to be hosted by universities. And obviously, of course, going forward, how are we going to mitigate that risk to ensure that we broaden our network of collaboration that is not only located within universities, so that we can be able to work with other institutions, whether it's TVET colleges or it's community colleges, to be able to deliver. So that impact has resulted in us not being able to achieve some of our targets. Secondly, I do also want to highlight the fact that we have also successfully been able, on a positive note, to...
Sorry, I have the figure here of the fund. It is 78.7 there, and the document here is
75.5. Chair, I'm not sure which presentation you... Yes.
Yeah,
it's 78.7 again. Yes.
The document is 75.50.
The document, Chair, are you referring to the presentation? Yes. I then suspected that you would not be having the latest updated presentation that I'm having. So the presentation that is showing on the slides will be the latest document. Yes. Okay. Then I was sorry about that.
Thank you. It would actually just help if we also received it afterwards, because it's important that we don't keep a record which is not accurate. It's just a slight spelling error. I understand that, with slide presentations, that's always a challenge. It's just the achieved not just be corrected. Thank you.
Just a comment on that. It's not as if we're doing annual performance plans or anything that's liable to change. This information is from the financial year ending March 2016. So why is there a difference in these targets? I mean, surely that information is fairly concretized by the time you produce your presentation.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Lord Members, for picking up those errors. We recognize them and apologize for that. I think what had happened is that when we worked out the targets in terms of graphically working them out, because what would be there obviously would be a reflection in terms of the annual report audited. Okay, so I think the mistake happened in terms of the calculation of the percentage. That's where it went wrong. But as I've indicated, we will definitely oblige and ensure that we provide the latest presentation in terms of the latest presentation. Okay. Chair, may I proceed? Okay, thank you very much. I think, Chair, I was making a point that on the positive side, while we've had a negative side in terms of the impact of fees must fall at our universities in collapse, we've had a positive spin-off where we've leveraged to a very large extent to the universities where we could be able to achieve more in terms of using their resources and the facilities, and the extra mile they have gone in ensuring that we achieve the achievement that we have been able to make. Chair, if we look at Program 1, that slide, we happen to have achieved all that was meant to be achieved. On the next slide, we had a challenge in terms of change management framework in support of business case. I think, Chair, what was anticipated was that before the end of the financial year, would have had the INSC bill been enacted, and we're hoping that we'll then be able to enact or act on this particular target. And as a result, that has not transpired, hence we've not been able to achieve it, the target that is showing on slide 12. In the next slide, Chair, we've also done fairly well in terms of achieving all the targets that are appearing on the slide, but I must highlight that the last slide could also not be achieved. I mean, target primarily because of the fact that the full establishment of INSC has not been completed as a process. The next slide, Chair, I think we have successfully been able to achieve all the targets as indicated on slide 14. And the next slide, in terms of Program 2 being one of our key programs, we've also done well in terms of exceeding some of our targets. Chair, if you look at the number of campaigns that were planned to happen, if you look at issues of brand visibility platform that were leveraged, we've done extremely well. We've not been able to achieve the public awareness of the report. And I think, as indicated, Chair, in some instances was also in anticipation of the fact that we would have had even more established capacity in terms of the new established INSC, but that has not been realized as yet, and hence we have not been able to achieve the target. Next slide on Program 2 as well. In terms of the targets that were planned there, we've achieved two and one not achieved, and as I've indicated, much of those that have not been achieved would have been related to us anticipating the enactment of INSC bill, and as a result being able to fully kick in and function as INSC as it was envisaged from the beginning of this particular financial year. In the next slide, Chair, that primarily talks to the core business of the Institute being e-astuteness that talks to teaching and learning and training and development in terms of our activities. We have realized quite a good success. If you look at how many illiteracy learners were targeted to reach in the year under review, we really exceeded it almost twice, because we planned to train 1,250, but we're sitting at 2,033. And of course, even in terms of sector users, we've exceeded the target. We've not done very well, Chair, I must say, in terms of the ICT practitioners trained. And I think, as I've already alluded to, the fees must fall was one of the quite a challenge for us to be able to achieve that particular target. We have, in terms of also community centers that are crucial in ensuring that we make a difference in our communities, being able to expand and reach out to more than what we had planned to do. We had planned to do 18, we found ourselves having done 21. Costs online, which we think is key, we're only able to do about 3 instead of the 6 targeted courses. And I think areas that we're hoping that as we expand our network of collaboration, and we'll be able to achieve and overachieve in terms of our targets. On the next slide that talks to knowledge for innovation, Chair, we've also had a challenge in terms of the research chairs that we thought we would have established. Our target was 2, and that primarily was targeting establishment of a chair at Tshwane University of Technology, and the other chair was to be established at Northwest University. We've also only been able to achieve 1 because there had been delays, particularly on the side of the university, to ensure that the necessary agreements and documentation signed off in time. That's what has been the challenge, as this particular target was only achieved in the last quarter of the financial year. Chair, the other challenge that we've had, of course, also related to the national environmental scan that we could not achieve, and largely also, I must just admit, Chair, that in terms of this particular target, what actually transpired, I think there was an under estimation of the costs. What was actually budgeted for when we picked up was an issue of about $500,000, but when we actually got to look into how much it would cost over $3 million to do it. But what we've done, we have actually addressed this issue. This target is one of the targets that we're planning to achieve in this particular year. We've allocated the necessary resources that were required to ensure that the target is done, because it's quite an important target as it relates to outcome 5, being one of the targets which the minister has committed to deliver together with the Minister of Higher Education and Training. So we're happy that we have been able to pick on it and ensure that we provide the necessary corrective measure in terms of what happened in the previous financial year. And also, in the next slide, we have been able to achieve most of the targets. We've not done very well in terms of the new products. And I think here, we talk of products, if you are just to elaborate, it's mainly talking about the apps that were to be developed, among other things. We'll be talking about content development in terms of the content that we were supposed to have developed. We have had challenges, and I don't want to overemphasize the impact of fees must fall, but partly also to that extent as how we do it, Chair. We have a situation in which we will then organize school children from various communities to come and engage and be trained on apps development. All right, and usually what we do then take them to the university, like for example, the University of Pretoria, so that they can be embarked on the exercise. So these events would be perhaps students would come in once in a week to the university and be taken through this training. But as things then became a little bit uncomfortable and problems at universities, we could not continue with the exercise. We had to then withdraw, you know, the program so that the students should be safe. And as a result, it impacted negatively in terms of us being able to reach, to realize the target. And lastly, Chair, on aggregation, we're happy to report that we've been able to achieve the only target that was planned in terms of reviewing the strategic guiding document for the institution in terms of competency framework. Chair, I think at this stage that would be my presentation in terms of performance. And Chair, if you allow me, I could allow the acting CFO to present the financials, if you allow me.
Thank you very much. Before the presentation comes in, let me just vacate this hot seat, and then what you said, I don't know what they call it, is the employment or report, So as we continue, we should take over.
Good afternoon, Chair and honourable members. Thank you for this opportunity to present the audited annual financial statements. If we look at slide 2, the entity has a surplus of 2 million and 3 million in 2015. The revenue generated by the surplus is mainly due by the revenue generated by the training department through entering into funded agreements with other state-owned entities. In addition to that, we also had a vacant post at senior management level that also contributed to the surplus. So we do enter into training departments with entities such as SABC, MICT, CETA, Moses Kotane Institute. Those allow us to generate a bit of revenue in addition to what we received from the National Treasury. I'd like to give you a highlight of what we have on our income statement. Our total income received for the year in the form of government funding, interest receivable and sundry income, it amounted to 55 million in the 2015-16 financial year. Most of those that funding came from National Treasury via the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services, which was 36.6 million, and we also earned interest of about just over a million rand. So when we receive our funds from the department, we transfer the funds into our call account deposit with the Reserve Bank, so that we can earn a bit of interest from those funds, and we just withdraw those funds into our check account as and when we need them. We also generated a revenue of about 6 million from the training projects that I spoke about on the second bulletin. Our operational expenditure for the year amounted to 53 million. If I can just give a highlight on some of the expenditure, our staff costs amounted to 17 million for the year. And then we also have professional fees outsourced, which is our cleaning and security services, which came to about 2 million. Our external audit fees were only 544,000 rand, and we also have consulting fees, which is our internal audit. We've outsourced our internal audit services that came to about 1.4 million for the year. The next slide is the statement of financial position, which we used to call the balance sheet. Our cash and cash equivalents at the end of the year were 13.3 million. Our receivables, that is 5 million. I know the portfolio committee has raised questions around our debtors in the past, and we did indicate that we handed over our debtors to an agency to assist us with the collections on those long-standing debtors. Our current assets are sitting at 1.3 million. We haven't bought new assets in a while, and the decline on the balance on our assets. And I'd also like to highlight the provision there of 3.5 million, which has not changed from 2015. Those are funds that we had received from the Department of Communications for the community radio project. There was that project was there were no activities that took place on that project in the year under review, hence the funds have not been used. I think I've already spoken to this slide where I spoke about the income versus the expenditure. And the next slide just generally speaks to the report of the Auditor General, where they state that the financial statements present different in all material respects the financial position of NEMISA at 31st March and its financial performance and cash flows for the year ended in accordance with GRAB and the requirements of the Public Finance Management Act. The Auditor General also audited our predetermined objectives, compliance with laws and regulations, and internal control, and they have given an unqualified opinion in that regard. I'd like to point out the fact that NEMISA incurred an irregular expenditure of 2.4 million in the year under review. That was mainly due to travel and accommodation requests. We've had a lot of projects, training projects that were going out into greatly into rural areas, where you'd find that it is quite a challenge to find the necessary quotations. With the PFMA requires us to get 3 quotations at least. And you'd find that in the rural areas that it's difficult to find quotations from 3 different suppliers, mainly because you'd find that there's a shortage of providers as well as they're not registered as they should be for us to be able to do business with them. In some instances it was also that we would have requested deviations at the time of the transactions to deviate from the normal processes. But the Auditor General's view at the time of the audit was that they felt that the reasons given on the deviations were not sufficient. And we then had to disclose the irregular expenditure. In addition to that, I'd also like to bring your attention to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that we incurred. The total fruitless and wasteful expenditure was 88 million, and I think about 88,000, not million, and 83,000 rands was due to a late payment that we made to SARS for the pay as you earn. I would also like to bring to your attention that we were able to recover the 83,000 rands from SARS after we explained the challenge that we were faced with, leading us to not being able to pay in time. Okay, that is the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Are we proceeding on? Done. Thank you very much for the presentation. Apologies, I was caught up in another meeting. I thought I would quickly go in and out while colleagues were online. Welcome to the board members. We did receive a letter, and I think my colleagues have indicated. And thanks to Congressman for holding her off. I don't think it was a coup. We'll allow members to interact with the presentation received, and then we'll have an opportunity for the team at NEMISA to respond to the issues raised. I noticed Honorable Kuya, I've been picking up, I hope you've been noting a lot of issues around feeding transport. We're relying on you to go into that fees on higher education to assist us. Mackenzie, Anna Mundongeni, Anna Wolstotesi, Anna Wushin. In that order, member.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Chairperson, I just have a little bit of a concern. According to the report, the presentation makes mention of irregular expenditure to the tune of 2.450, but on page 102, there are also other instances, which brings it to a total of 3 million. Now, I think it's just important that we don't only refer to one item of irregular expenditure, which is an amount of 2.450,788, which is deviating from competitive bidding, but I think we should also identify the other shortfalls and shortcomings and present a comprehensive package of irregular expenditure. I think it's important that we don't just have one element of it. And I would like to know why was that not captured correctly. Then I have a question on the fees must fall. Chairperson, by the way, I think it is correct that we actually say, despite serious challenges, I think it's good to see that there were some good deliverables. So it's not a negative tone all round, but the point is, obviously, our role is to make you improve on your financial management as well as on your achievement of a predetermined objective. So just have a little bit of a concern with regards to the matters listed for non-achievement, fees must fall. If I recall the period last year, and you know, the period under the review, it was not as intense as we have it now. It was not as militant and as, can I say, as radical. And yes, there could have been challenges, but I don't know if you had an annual target, for instance, of ICT practitioners trained of 400, and you've only achieved 162. Does it refer to completion of a course? Did the others not return, or what? What is the reason? Because maybe there were some other matters that also complicated, and that we don't just capture everything under fees must fall. Let's look at the items. And I've identified 3. Page 33, there are 2. And then it's also with the development of new products, there's also a reference to the reason being fees must fall. So please, if you can just indicate that we don't buy 100%, that it's only fee must fall. There could be other shortcomings as well. Then, Chairperson, thirdly, I would like to know staff incentives on page 92. We have noted what the reconciliation of provisions of 2015 were, and this time around 2016, there's quite a steep increase in staff incentives. Just an indication, what is the reason for the steep increase? Was it necessary to incentivize more staff layers? What is the need for that? And obviously, if there's a performance system in place and if everybody signs performance contracts, etc., and they overachieve, excellent. But do you have that ability to manage all of that? Do you conduct performance assessments and then incentivize those? Is that in place? Chair, with that, I have my 3 questions. I have more, but I will wait for another opportunity. Thank
you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a general comment, if I can also echo Honourable Killian's comment about the fees must fall. I mean, that took place in November, essentially the first one, and so things were disrupted for a couple of weeks, but then it certainly settled down, no doubt about that. So refer to page 35, where you only achieved one of the six targets. The target could not be reached due to delays and disruptions related to the FISMA's fall campaign. So throughout that whole year, as far as I can see, there was 1 month at most that was sort of disrupted, and yet you only achieved one of those targets. So what happened? What were you doing in the other 10 months? My daughter's also at the hotbed of activity at Pretoria University, and they somehow managed to get through that academic year without too much trouble. So, you know, if you could explain that. Given also that, and you referred to your new products being apps or primarily app related, I would also imagine that a lot of that kind of development could happen off campus. And we've seen that now with the Fees Must Fall, in fact, free education and decolonization going on right now, that a lot of universities are actually moving their activities online and off campus, off physical campus. I know they're doing that at Pretoria, I know they're doing that at UCT. Can you not do that as part of your contingency plan? In fact, do you have any contingency plans in place to guard against that kind of thing happening again? That's all part of the one question, Chairperson. Then on page 95, you've got scrapped assets of 366,774. Once you scrap an asset, and I suppose CFO, this is a question for you. Once you scrap an asset beyond its useful book life, what do you do with the asset after that, as a company? What is your accounting policy? Then you covered the SARS penalty for me. Then my last question, Chairperson, also relates to the irregular expenditure on page 102. When you say the matters are under investigation, and there's quite a few of them, can you just explain, in terms of these, has anybody been held to account? Is disciplinary action been taken against any individuals? How many people are involved in these activities? I think the one that concerns me most, that deviation from competitive bidding, is that mostly related to the accommodation? If it is, then I will withdraw my question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Hello,
thanks, Chair. The auditor general reported that 57% of targets under this program said there was no adequate and reliable evidence for the reported achievement. Could you please explain why did not provide the AG with reliable and adequate evidence for reported achievement to this program? Number two, also AG reported that there was insufficient evidence for the marine target and actual achievement. Can explain why it did not provide the AG with sufficient reason for the variance between planned target and actual achievement. The third one, can you provide an action plan on how it is going to address some of the adverse findings of the AG? Thank you, Chair.
On the allocation of 11.3 million for the project, can we get a breakdown for each project? And we agree that because that it was requisition for the cost, and also the focus on she will connect. You know, ICT has been announced well, and really appreciate the focus on F1 women on ICT. And on the issue of SMS to the medication for the legal treatment, how do you deal with the issue of language? Because not everyone can read English, and most of the time we do SMS in English. On the scholarship exchange, what could be the challenge for not having the exchange program? And it is important for the exchange program be
because they give us exposure, especially with the developers, wherever we can benchmark ourselves and try to catch up to the fast, you know, growing ICT world. But you get issue this one tomorrow, there's something new. So let's get exposure through action program. We can try to catch up.
Thank you, Chair. Most of my questions are gone, but I'll ask on page on page 31, formal partnership. You said two partnerships were renewed. One was the Ghana Central University College. Where on earth is that? Because of fear of xenophobic attacks, and then the Eastern Cape Development Corporation due to reduced budget. Can you please give us some explanation of those, please?
Thank you very much, members, for that. Can I just get in terms of the present on the documents, page 73, in terms of your finances. Firstly, what is the difference between consulting and professional fees in terms of this document? I see that two different, normally when we see professional fees, we always assume it's consultants, but I see you've got consulting separately and then you've got professional fees. Maybe just explain that. And then I see the other one, it's movement in provision for bad debt. If that can be explained, just on page 73, those three. Another issue that I need clarity on page 68, you've got a paragraph around going concern, that the annual financial statements have been prepared on the basis of accounting policies applicable to a going concern. Just to understand, how come you are a going concern? Because one of them is that annually you are provided with resources that are transferred, and you've been fighting with DG Shalembe to ensure that your money is transferred on time. Maybe I'm missing something there. And then the last question, like all my colleagues are doing, I'm noting in terms of the targets, when you've reached targets, for example, you've overachieved on your targets. And then the others are not. Just on the targets, all the target issues. Does this mean when you overachieve, you set the bar low, where you could have set somewhere middle for achievement? If that's not the case, what's the issue? Because even on the targets, when you look at other issues, maybe let me just page, I think those are the page 35 where I'm focused on mainly. And then others where you have not, and you're saying the target, for example, not achieved, as it was realized that the target was under budgeted for. Maybe just explanation there, why did we under budget for that target? If we didn't reach that. So those are the three that I wanted to just get for now, and then I'll align myself to my other colleagues so that we have three, and then we can come to the second round. Over to each and then to the team.
Chairperson, I ask the acting CEO to respond to these, please.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. I think I will respond to issues that relate to government information and the finance-related issues they've been here for what I respond to. Chair, on the question around the fees must fall, I must indicate that how we plan some of our activities, particularly workshops that were meant to happen within the precinct of the universities, would have meant that those workshops would then have to be held somewhere else than the campus itself. In terms of the report that we got from some of our colleagues, it's been the challenge we can be able to secure alternative venues to can host those. Secondly, I must indicate that while it's true that some of the activities that relate to training of the students or the intended target market would have been offsite, but in terms of the nature of the workshops that were designed, as I've indicated, that would have then targeted high school students to come into the university perhaps once in a week to be taken through the programs. And what we specifically experienced was a situation in which those could not happen. I think in terms of what transpired was that the fees must fall was in October and November of last year. And I think if I remember very well, I'm talking on the correction, we've had also a similar challenge in February of 2016 when the academic year started. I think that's where we had a challenge as well, as I recall. So what I think the point that I'm trying to make is that I do agree that obviously given the fact that we've had an experience in October, November, obviously there should be a situation in which you then have a plan B, you know, to get cater for such situations. But I try to indicate that I think while it's true that it is possible that in some instances you could be able to have an alternative, in some instances it becomes extremely difficult. I'll give an example of the experience I've had, for example, in the KZN area, particularly around Durban, where we would have organized training events to occur, and if for one reason or the other, you then postpone that event, becomes extremely difficult to get an alternative venue or given the date, given the number of programs that are run by various institutions, including TVET colleges, because they would have full-time programs and other activities that are planned. It becomes a very difficult situation to can even secure a venue to conduct training. But what I do want to indicate as well is the fact that the type of programs that we're running are not necessarily programs that will only require a training space as in a classroom. You would require a lab facility with Wi-Fi facilities, for example, where the challenge is where you may not necessarily get an ideal type of a facility, you know. And I must probably admit to say, you would have given a response to an overall field must fall, but in essence, it will have a ripple effect in the fact that while the causal effect, it feels much more, but it also has peculiarities that relates to specifically the type of environment that you require to deliver a particular course. Because if you were to do apps development, you would need to have to access to internet. You need to have access to software that might be installed, whether it's on the desktop or you install that software in your laptops. Those are some of the challenges that you're having. But if you were to ask me, how do you, going forward, mitigate this risk? You don't say, among other things, and we've begun to do it, you don't invest in desktops. You buy laptops. Laptops make your training team more mobile. You can set up anywhere. You load those machines with the necessary software, and you're able to deliver it. And one of the challenges that we've had as well is the fact that we would not necessarily have facilities that would have adequate bandwidth, if we were to say, in terms of data, so that you can be able to facilitate your training. This happens mainly in the rural parts. I mean, we've had training at Colesberg. It has been a challenge to get deliver the training because of the speed or even access to the network itself. It has happened in the part of Eastern Cape, where we're training in Lusikisi, for example, or even Umtata itself. So we have challenges in terms of really setting up where you can be able to do ideal training. And of course, not training for the sake of training. Training that you want to make a difference and impact in terms of exercise and activities that you need to give to learners. In some instances, it also meant us having to get the router for the data so that we can improve, you know, the access to that. If I were to also respond, I think there was also an issue, a question around development of products. And I think also the apps, as I've indicated, you don't just do an app in isolation from a facility or having to have an ideal software that could be able to help you. and in most instances, if I were to talk about the Western Cape University, we have a conduct there we've set up in that setup in terms of the lab itself. So if there's disruption at that university, you can't remove that setting and set it up somewhere else, you know, because it's part of the system setup. That's the nature of the challenges that we've had in terms of being able to deliver on that. There was also a question, Chair, that relates to moving activities. Yes, indeed, as far as possible, we'll do it. We've already tried, as I said, bought some few routers. As we go to rural areas, we utilize them to improve the access to internet. And obviously, we are hoping that we'll have more of such facilities so that we are not disrupted by some of these activities. So if we were to then go to, there was also a question around adequate and reliable information collection, and explain why this info. Which I think I must just indicate that what we picked up was that in terms of our programs, there are those programs that will be delivered as workshops, and that those that will be delivered as accredited or non-accredited programs. Now, if it's a workshop, usually you're not end up being able to assess the participants. But if it's an accredited program, obviously you need to have assessment system in place where people are assessed. Okay. What we've picked up is that, and I think largely to the extent that perhaps we have not had a common understanding with our colleagues, to say you need to give us records where learners happened to be assessed. Okay. Unfortunately, what happened when we were being audited, where the situation is some of our colleagues, that's also a question of timing, and I'm not necessarily giving this an excuse, and it's a matter that we need really to address. We had some of our colleague directors could have been away to give us information, whether on a conference elsewhere, and we failed to access the adequate information that shows that learners were involved, what were their marks, what was the outcome of the assessment. We've had such instances where the AG would not be happy if we were to give him proof of registration for the course and the fact that learners had attended. And the AG would say, no, but I'm not happy with this. And that's where we're talking about information being inadequate or not being reliable. Okay. So the question is, how are we going to address this going forward? We've made a commitment to saying to our colleagues, we need to make sure that forever, in terms of capturing learner information, it must not only wait until the end of the year. As and when it happens, we need to interrogate that information, ensure that we've got the evidence. The evidence is accordingly also recorded so that even in the event where they are not available, I mean the column directors to give us information, the information is already with us. We are able to provide it to the colleagues, to the AG. But in most instances, it was a question of saying, fine, I can see you registered the learners, I can see they're being attending. You're saying they're competent. Give us more information in terms of what their competency information was, which we're not being able to address. So that's what the AG is referring to in terms of inadequate or not being reliable. That's exactly what has been found out. Plan targets. I think in terms of the reasons that we're giving to the AG, I must say that in some cases we're not able to find each other. For example, if you were to talk about the course that would not be accredited by the result in a participant getting a certificate of participation as opposed to getting a certificate of attendance. Those are two different issues. And in cases of find that if you say certificate of participant, how different is it from a certificate of attendance? Now, we have situations in which for a certificate of participant, various learners during the course of the training will be given tasks, assessment tasks, and complete them. And we'll give you a certificate of participation provided you have been able to attend and participate in the course, 75% of the planned course. But if the course was planned to deliver over 5 days, we'd expect you to have been there for 4 days. If not, you'll not get a certificate of participation, but you'll then get a certificate of attendance. So those are some of the issues in terms of us where we differed with the will aid you. However, as I've indicated, we have made a commitment to ensure that together with our colleagues, we have a common framework, a common understanding of how we need to ensure that there is adequate evidence provided in order to support our initiatives. And not only adequate, but whatever we embark upon can spend the SMART criteria in terms of our targets, because we have picked up the situation in which we need to ensure that our targets really meet the criteria, so that we don't have issues when we have to deal with the aging. The question of the action plan, yes, indeed, we have. Honorable member developed the action plan to address some of these issues, so that we ensure that the necessary adequate measures are being taken to address this. And I think the CFO will also touch on that in terms of the process itself, where we are then engaging with, for example, our colleagues through our workshops to be saying to them, how do we deal with these issues? Secondly, one of the most important measures that we have taken was to ensure that we will then have our internal auditor engaging with all our colleagues, so that some of these issues or the interpretation of the findings of the AG are properly understood, so that we can be able to then develop measures that will be able to address them. Those are some of the actions that we have begun to do to address the findings that have been developed. The question relating to relating to the use of SMS, quite right. We're trying this, but I don't think it's impossible for us to have an SMS being issued in various languages. I don't think it is. And I think we'll make sure so that the language doesn't become a barrier for our people to access this facility. So it does not necessarily be in English. We've had situations in which in parts of the country, for example, Northern Cape, they had made a particular request to say, we should then also look at providing the cost itself, not only the SMS, but looking at some of our programs we delivered in Afrikaans and other indigenous languages. It's a matter that, of course, we are also looking into, because we think it's important, because if we don't do that, you're still going to be marginalized, many of our people, in terms of issue of language. Scholar exchange program, which I think what has been the challenge is that it has been a challenge around being able to reach an agreement. And in this particular instance, it was one of our colleagues, it was in Cape Collab, that had then engaged in a scholarship program. But what we were being informed was that there was a problem in terms of finally concluding the scholarship program. What I do want to indicate, Chair, going forward, is the fact that we have taken a commitment together with the shareholder, and I think recently we have been made aware of opportunities that are there in terms of much bilateral agreements that have been signed with various countries, and seeing how we can be able to then ensure that our scholarship exchange programs take off, because they're quite critical. In view of that development and us being made aware, we'll make sure that the scholarship programs indeed do work here, because they had great value in terms of our institution, the program, and our programs, of course. There's a question that relates to the Ghana University Partnership. What happened is that in the year under review, we had planned to have a partnership carrying on, because we've had initially some students coming from Ghana into the country. The first lot of students came in, spent about 3 weeks, I think there were about 20 of those. So we then entered into agreement with the Ghana Central University for the second year. But unfortunately, we had xenophobic attacks. And they then started to engage with us and say, we're worried. And that was about a couple of weeks before that was to happen. Should we come, should we not come? Please advise us what's going on. As a result, that partnership did not take off, because they were worried, they were fearing for their safety. The ECD as well, I think ECT is a state-owned entity, and I think they had a challenge in terms of the resource of the budget, where they had made a commitment to work with us for a period of 3 years. Of course, based on us signing an SLA on an annual basis, they had challenges with finances, and they said, look, we do not think we will continue with the winter partnership. That's what transpired.
I think I would have, I think let me deal with the last question, Chair, that relates to targets and overachievement. I do want to say, Chair, that the impression might be that we are under targeting and we're not. I think we find ourselves in situations in which we would have planned to train 100 learners. And the 100 would have been based on the target or the resources available committed by the shareholder, all right? But then you get situations in which there are other people who have vested interest in your programs, and they approach you and say, look, we want you to train us into this program. Do 5, do 100, like it has happened. I mean, we've had SABC approaching us and saying, train 100 learners for learnerships in about 5 provinces. Now, the achievement of the target would obviously add, and then you'd have more achieved than what you intended to achieve. We've had many of such initiatives that are coming from various state entities that have interest, including business, where you get MNET coming to you and say, please do this particular program for us, and that will add to your target. Secondly, we've also had situations in which we have leveraged on our own collabs. Collabs would have then planned to do X, but then also they are faced with situations there's requests within the province. It could be a municipality, it could be a health department, could be other state department that are saying, can you partner with us? Can we do this together? And then as a result, we're then able to achieve more than what we have initially planned to do. Thank you. I'll give over to the acting CFO. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'd like to address the question regarding the irregular expenditure. I did not mean to mislead the portfolio committee. What I was saying is that the irregular expenditure that we've incurred in the current year under review is 2.4 million. It then totals up to 3 million because of the 633,000 that was carried over from the 2015 financial year. The next question is around staff incentives. The reason for a huge increase on the staff incentives is that payment was made in January 2016. It related to the performance bonuses relating to the 2014 financial year as well as the 2015 financial year. Hence, there's a huge increase compared to the previous financial year. Squared assets. Our policy says we can dispose through those assets through an auction. So we'd go and get market-related quotations and then have an auction on those assets. Or where it didn't fit, we can donate those assets to schools, things like computers, and the board so the CFO would make recommendations to the board to make a decision on how we should dispose them. Regarding the consequence management on irregular expenditure, an investigation was done on the irregular expenditure that was incurred in the 2015 financial year by our internal auditors. They're independent because it's an outsourced function of our company. And recommendations were made to the board. However, there hasn't been anyone that has been held accountable regarding the irregular expenditure of 633,000. The irregular expenditure for that we incurred this year of 2.4 million. We are about to start the process of investigating all the transactions. So also nobody has been held accountable regarding those translations. Honorable Sadisti also asked the question, requested allocation of each collab for relating to the 11.3 million. Can we request to send through that information to the portfolio committee via email? The difference between consulting and professional fees. I cannot say that there's necessarily a difference, but I think what we were trying to achieve was to have the internal audit fees on a separate line item instead of lumping it with the rest of the professional of the contracts that we have in the company, like security and cleaning. Mm-hmm. The audit one is the consulting one. Yes. The movement in provision of bad debt. I would like to believe that your question there is due to the fact that there's a huge difference between what we disclosed in the previous financial year and currently. What happens is, if you can go to page 88 of the annual report. Where it says trade and other receivables impaired. We take all our outstanding debtors. We look at all those outstanding debtors that have not paid us within the previous 12 months. And then we make an estimate to say these debtors are unlikely not to ever pay us. So we make a provision in case we indeed don't receive payment from them. So if you see the in 2015, our provision for bad debts was 2.972, and then in the current financial year it is 2.952. So the difference between those two figures are 19,000, which is disclosed in the income statement. So it is a movement. That's what it is. The next question is about going concern. So the concept of going concern is for the entity to look at whether you think you will be still in operation in the next foreseeable future, which is in the next 12 months. So at the time of reporting, you usually already have a letter from National Treasury to confirm your funds for the next financial year, so then you believe that you will still be in operation in the next 12 months. Mainly because our funding is from the national, we are totally reliant on the National Treasury funding, so we believe that we will continue as a going concern in the next 12 months. I don't know if I missed any other question.
I think, Chair, there was a question around the under budgeting in relation to the national scale. I just want to indicate the fact that I think what actually transpired in this instance was that the understanding in terms of what was to be done in terms of the scan was that initially the scan that was to be done was not supposed to have been national. Okay, it was supposed to be a provincial scan. But then it emerged that in actual fact what we require, we do have to do a national scan. And obviously then the budget to do a national scan would have been far bigger than the budget to do the provincial scale. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Let's switch the mic off. Let's have a second round of comments and questions from other members. Honorable Kidian and Honorable Sotis.
Honorable Kidian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have listened very carefully about the reply to the question posed by Honourable Zungeni on the Auditor General needing additional information and the usefulness of the information under question. I just have a little bit of a concern, and I hope you will just allow me to just probe this matter. I would like to know, what is the target audience of NAMESA? And why I'm saying that, your reply, CEO, is that there's a difference between a certificate of attendance and a certificate of participation. My issue is, you know, especially people in the rural areas, unless they get a certificate that will open a door to a job opportunity for them, I think we will not do justice to their yearning for training. Now, is there any level of testing for proficiency that takes place? To say that you have now been awarded a certificate of proficiency, NQF level X, Y, and Z, and you will be able to do this, that, and the following. You know, I'm very concerned. We must, and I know you refer to the global context and the global index, indicating that we are very way behind with our ability of ordinary people to know and understand ICTs. So clearly, then your target audience is the people out there, general public. But the minute that you start having collabs with university institutions, you're entering a new domain. Then you need a qualification that will mean something for people. And what are you going to pitch it at a specific level? And that brings me to the point, Chairperson. Is INESI or NAMESA, whatever you are called, are you positioned to report to the right department, DTPS? If your target audience is widening understanding for ICTs amongst the public, yes, then you are. But if you are moving into formal training, then you should go to higher education. That is just a concern that I'm expressing. So have you cleared your own mind what exactly is your mandate? And have you engaged your shareholder as far as that is concerned? Chairperson, then it's the accreditation question. And then I wanted to know, there was reference about debtors. Who are the debtors? Are they students? Are they other institutions? I have noted on page 93, exchange revenue, training and development, sundry income from students, other income. And then there's also a note, sundry income from students, which is 28,979. Can you perhaps just explain that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Ma'am, what is
thank you, Chairperson. NAMESA has really been aware in terms of empowering young people in general. But accreditation is really a point of concern, like NAMESA can say. You know, we live in a world whereby you need a certain paper for you to get employment. How about maybe the workshop be something like a freedom course? Then after the freedom course, you move forward to the one that will be accredited. And on the penalty for late payment, with other presentations, we came across, I mean, the same challenge. What is so difficult for people to pay on time and avoid penalty? And the last one, just to add on this one, actually your response to one of the members here as to what you do with your assets, like you auction them sometimes to get into school. I was just going to ask the same question, that as part of social responsibility, can't you maybe also consider NGOs, because
no one's budgeting for them, especially like a school, because for my school, there's definitely a guaranteed budget from government. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just a clarity here. Yeah. The CFO is talking about the surplus. Okay, fine, that's good. But it's talking about the vacant post. To me, I don't know whether I'm wrong or right. When you say a vacant post, when you have the money for the vacant post as a surplus, I'm not quite sure whether it's a big English or what. I'm sorry about that. How many posts do you have? And give us time frame to fill this post. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me just give so the thing to respond. I don't know whether it's going to be off or the
Should I ask if you could I just ask the acting CEO to respond? I might also come back in regarding to the issue of where the reporting should take place.
Thank you, Chair. The first question, another one, Killian, relating to the target audience. The audience range from ordinary men and women in the villages, the youth in particular, that's the target we're looking into. And if you say to me, what type of youth? Are they youth that are in the schooling system? No. We're talking about youth that would have left school. We're talking about youth that might have graduated, but then we need them to reskill them, to redirect them, because they might have qualified, and the field in which they're qualified, they are not able to secure employment. Okay. But then we'll be looking at also an issue of reskilling government employees that needs them to be then to be able to use the modern technology is killing them. All right. We'll then be looking at ordinary men and women, particularly women, because in some cases we're also targeting women in terms of courses. Now, what you'll find out is that we have a situation in some of our courses are meant really to upskill or to reskill. All right. And to be more specific here, you would have short courses, like if you talk about digital literacy. A digital literacy program would have among its components basic computer literacy, where it would give you Excel, give you access, PowerPoint, it would give you internet, social media. Okay. We have increasingly picked up that there are many of our people who still believe that the cell phone can only be used as a phone, without realizing the value of a cell phone beyond phoning. So we're venturing into that. For example, we will develop and design a course around the use of cell phone in this age and era. Where we're not talking about a feature phone, we're talking about a smartphone in terms of people becoming aware, all right? The nature of the course itself, besides that it's practical, you must be shown how to access social media, you must be shown how to access internet. You must be shown how to use an app, for example. That's a type of problem. So the point I'm making is to say, in doing, you're then being assessed whether you're able, even if you may not formally have a test to say we've taught you A, B, C, D, let's assess whether you learned anything. As you learn, as you do, as you practice, as you apply, you're then able to use it. Because at the end, we would have been given assignments to say, do social network interface or work on a social media platform or use this particular app to see what you can do. So as we carry on, you are able then to show us at the end. And obviously we'll then say, okay, you have participated, but you cannot then conclude, therefore, that the person is necessarily, I'm not sure whether one could argue that the person is proficient. I'm not sure that I could argue to that extent. But in the same extent, they're being exposed to an extent that he's able to apply the skill or to apply his knowledge in terms of network. Secondly, I agree entirely with you to say, once you begin to offer courses, we need to ensure that there's alignment to South African Qualifications Act. The country and the government is committed to ensuring that we should be careful not to give a false hope
we want to make sure that we don't give a false hope. We clarify whether a course is accredited or not accredited. We give a choice. Do you want an accredited or not accredited? Clearly, even in digital literacy, you have a situation where some people may say, we don't want the entire course. I know how to type. I know how to do Excel. I want certain components of that course. It could be an etiquette in terms of the do's and don'ts of internet. They choose that. You go take them through that, and they end up mastering it. We are quite clear on the fact that it's critical of us to ensure that we align to the national qualifications framework. We allow our people to be able to articulate into various programs. That's key and fundamental. Even if the entry level might have been a situation in which you've done a course and a skills program, which is a part qualification, we'll give you a certificate, what we call a statement of results. We do that. We give such certificates. Much of our qualifications are accredited in the QCTO, Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, because it's about doing practical skills, knowledge that you can apply there and there. But also in terms of our colleagues, we have colleagues that are offering qualifications that are accredited, even though we do have also non-accredited programs. So that distinction is clearly drawn, but the choice is made. Even in online training, there are those people that may just want to access the training so that they can be able to master and know it. They may not be interested in being assessed. They may not be interested in getting a piece of paper. That's what we have found. But I think I must make sure, just clarify the fact that we are mindful and committed to ensure that people participate in this course and end up with the relevant qualification where they have opted to do their qualification. It could be a web design short course drawn from the full qualification skills program. They do it, you get after 3 months, you get your skills program. In some cases, we even run boot camps that result in them getting a skills program as a qualification, particularly for the youth. But the target audience that are not necessarily serving that, they wanted to be taught how to access internet and to play that. And the question of testing and proficiency, I think I've touched on it, but we are aligned fully. I think our bouquet of accredited qualifications as we speak. We stand at about, I think it's 7 to 8 qualifications for which we are accredited, mainly in the QCTO space. You raised a very important question around whether we should be reporting to DHET or TTPS as a shareholder. It's a matter that I think the task team that has been established has also been grappling with. What I want to indicate is the fact that the task team has in principle agreed, particularly the DHET, to say, look, you could play the space of ensuring that there is training and capacity building in various components, but the issue of curriculum development and offerings should be done through collabs, given their capacity, their reputation and all that. So that is a component and agreement in principle in terms of the role of the institute in delivering programs. I think another very important issue that has been raised, and I think in relation to the question that comes from the Honorable Tradition, the issue of articulation is important, and I agree entirely with you, to say if one of our learners might have started to do a course which is not accredited as an entry orientation, for example, to web development, it must culminate in that student being able to then register for an accredited program so that that person then ends up with a nationally recognized piece of paper, whether it's a statement of results or a qualification. I think that's very, very important. I think the acting CFO then respond to the question of vacant posts. Thanks.
Honorable members, the question regarding debtors, yes, those are our student debtors. They have been, those debtors have been recurring for many years. Probably what maybe NEMISA didn't write with other institutes when your fees for a certain year have not been paid, then you're not allowed to register for the following academic year. But that is not the policy with NEMISA.
probably an attempt to be corrected. I think it's because NEMISA was mandated to train people from previously disadvantaged backgrounds. The sundry income, we had about three students that had two or one courses that were outstanding. So that sundry income is the fees that they paid for that academic year to finalize their studies in graphic design and animation. Surplus funds. On that issue, I was saying that our surplus is mainly due to the training projects that we entered into with other institutes. So we made a lot of income from those training projects. In addition to the surplus, we were saying that also vacant posts of our senior management also contributed to that surplus, because we would not have paid those salaries that we had expected to pay in that particular year. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Chair, just to add on the issue of vacant posts that were not filled. We're dealing with NEMISA as an institution in the context of an institution that is in transition. It's transiting to INEC, Council, whatever. There was a deliberate decision of the board to say, for instance, when the COO resigned, and we are in the process of restructuring our organogram, we felt that it would not be advisable to fill that post while we're still trying to reconstitute how our organogram is going to be. Therefore, you make a, this I will call it an unfortunate saving or surplus, which at any rate should have been used, but because the institution is moving from one mandate to another, it will not be wise to fill that post before you finalize what exactly you will be doing going forward. And just go back towards the issue of fees must fall just one twice, how they affect us. They may also get affected. For instance, at the beginning of the year, we have to give up some of the courses or offerings that we're giving, because learners, so students come, we don't meet the required numbers that we need to offer that course. Because some comes under the pretext of saying, no, I'm sorry, with knowledge that we come here, we must then be funded for the whole course. It must be free, influenced by the issues around fees must fall. And when you don't reach that number, we then drop the course, because if we proceed, we're actually going to add a debt to the institute, which would be unnecessary. On the issues, for instance, just the issues of irregular expenditures, we quite aware, and the CFO has indicated what were the chunk of the irregular expenditures, which is the 2.something million as a result of traveling and all those accommodation and the like. And we, in the last meeting, once we've got the Auditor General's report, we've requested our finance section through the CFO to come up with a remedial look which would address the larger chunk of where the regular expenditure will come from. And probably among other things that we have recommended is maybe we should have a panel of, we should go out on the asset and have a panel of service providers so that we are not stuck with one service provider. If we have a panel of three service providers, would it in most cases be within the rule in terms of who gave us or whose reach is outreach to the different areas is more than the others, so we might not be would be able to offshore some of this irregular expenses. And I hope that and I'm lively informed that in the next board meeting the CFO department will be able to table a proposed remedial work for the board to adjudicate on. And we hope that in the coming 1.5 quarter, November, December, and January to March, we have done some work to avoid a repeat finding on the same, on the irregular expense. Thank you.
Chair, may I perhaps also respond to the question as to whether we are, at what level are we pitched, and whether we are positioned in terms of the right department. The interesting thing around the digital society and the digital abilities of people is the fact that it's actually transversal across everything. So if one would think of another department, immediately there one would also say, yes, but these things belong in a different department as well. So it has to be transversal across all levels. I think the excellent part of the conceptualization of the National eSkills Program was the fact that it made use of co-labs at universities. That means we've got entities that have got a knowledge mandate. They are supposed to have knowledge, otherwise they shouldn't be at a university at all. There must be a knowledge base which is built in a certain area. They collaborate with departments. It's in the interest and it's in the line of departments to create the higher education degrees according to their mandates. At the same time, the co-labs interact with provinces and with NGOs in the province, or broader than a province even. At the same time, they interact there to create other kinds of interventions, which might not be at a degree level, but indeed it should be certified if possible. And that's one issue we will attend to, because a trustable kind of certification is extremely important. So we will look into that closer. It's not an easy issue, because if one thinks of mobile, how do you actually go about? Until now, I know one should, but until now it was difficult to say, how do you actually do that kind of certification around mobile? I can speak about this because I was involved in one program where at the level of one person, small business owners in Kayelicha were trained in a day program and followed up afterwards to see what comes out of their training to make their use of their mobile devices relevant for being better in their business. It was an experimental thing. I don't think it was done in this way elsewhere in the country. We were extremely happy with the results, and a further round is in place. The issue was indeed attended to what extent do people say afterwards that it means something for them. Whether one can test it and certify it, we have to see. But we must keep in mind South Africa is a mobile first, not mobile first only, but also a mobile only for many people. According to last year's household survey of households, I'm not speaking of individuals now, 85% of households in South Africa have only access through cell phones to the internet. It's a hugely important, the model we are developing in South Africa for developing a mobile-only digital world for many people, which isn't a bad world, because you're not going to have your laptop with you always, but you have your smartphone with you always, so it's a positive world. But the challenges of thinking also in terms of certification and of testing how people get how people obtain the skills and what they can do with it afterwards, it's a challenge, and it's a process we are embarking upon, and I foresee that within the next quarter or two we will have intense discussions at the MISA level around the realities of this one dimension of our challenge, namely the mobile only or the mobile first world.
Thank you very much. You still want to say something? Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to address the question by Honorable Sotetsi regarding the penultimate fire on what had happened. It is a similar situation with Sisasa. When the CEO and the CFO resigned, we were left with one signatory. And our arrangement with the bank is that when we release payment, it should be two signatories. So when the CFO resigned, we did make arrangements to have another party to be available to release with the CEO. But then the CEO unexpectedly also left the organization, and we were left with one signatory. So while there were still negotiations on who should act and also arranging signatories with the bank, we missed our deadline with SARS. Following which we wrote a letter to SARS and just explained what had happened, and they waived the penalty. How many vacant posts? At 31st March, we had 11 vacant posts. Two of those were CEO and CFO, and I believe Cabinet has approved those appointments. We also had HR manager, procurement manager, accountant, and those positions have been filled. We also have senior manager of ICT. We've done interviews, and those people are going through background checks and psychometric testing. So they should be able to start with us by the end of the of this year, of by December. And we are also about to perform interviews for senior manager for marketing. So we also hope to fill that post by the end of this year. And other positions, which is three of them, they relate to the training department. I think with those posts, we've decided not to fill them currently because we do not have, there isn't a need at the moment because we do not have learners. So what we would do is we have projects. We employ people on a fixed-term basis in line with that particular project so that we do not have people in the office while they do not have deliverables. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that and for the clarification. I think for me, mainly on the MISA is the conclusion of the transition. Is very important. The sooner you conclude the transition, knowing the future and establishing the new entity and everything, for us it will be very important because I think even the instability and all that, for you to retain the skills that you are attracting, when people are finding themselves in an organization that is not very clear in terms of its future, it becomes difficult. I know that you've concluded the process with the Department of Higher Education in those discussions, which we welcome them. But I think the sooner we have organization, the act and establishing the entity, it will help again, because with the new board that is there, looking forward to seeing that, I think that would help, and hopefully the initial and they will continue to transfer money in time, not in the third quarter. But within the first 10th quarter of the financial year, he knows we always make a reference to that. So we'll always constantly check if he's transferring the money on time so that you do not suffer. Thank you very much for the presentation and the engagement. We really appreciate it. There must just to deal with some, and you're free to leave if you want to, deal with in-house things. You remember last time we had requested that Dr. Zedna come today. They couldn't come. Otherwise, we'd be done with everything today. They have internet governance conference happening in Durban. Hence, we are internet governance. Yeah, I'm right. When I'm making sense, looking at me, I'm saying something wrong, that's why I'm repeating, so I can hear myself. Because the way you look at me, it's like I said something wrong, that's why I'm repeating. Yeah, I can hear myself properly if I pronounce the right word.
Oh,
yes. So, they were not able to come here today. Two, I'm concerned about Thursday, based on the apologies that we've got. Most members are not here. Honorable Kilian is now going for oversight and all that.
Don't worry.
So you are looking forward to being here just to, So there's that issue, but again, the other thing that I wanted to speak on is the process of the report. I won't be here as well on Thursday, so I thought let me just clear out on the report, which I will be working with the team. No, I'm not here. I'm attending IPU, and I'm traveling on Thursday. That's why I had to go to the speaker's office, because there's something I would love to. I've got a paper that I was editing, like one of the draft resolutions. Somehow I always get myself into those things, and then they eventually end up tying me up because of the work. But this is the last IPU I would attend.
Where is it?
It's in Geneva. So the issue is of the report. We're going to try and push with the team, depending on what time you think. So the members have their caucuses on Thursday, are they confirmed?
Mm-hmm.
ANC caucus not there. So it's DA caucus, EFF, no. So it's DA. Can't you bang caucus?
No.
Only if you die.
Give
more apologies in advance.
Is it? Yeah, that you had your hand up.
Jefferson, I'm concerned if we must. By the way, I have to leave now because I'm really going to have to go to straight bang into the drink. I'm going to first go back to my home because I forgot something there. Jefferson, what we've done in the past, it's not perhaps ideal, but under the circumstances, I would like to suggest when Honorable Kulwane was chairing the former Communications Committee, and it was also difficult to get Dr. Zabner, what they have done is they actually looked at the presentation, looked at the previous year, see if there was any progress, and just included some comments that clearly specifying that we couldn't interact with them. So my proposal would be that instead of trying to meet with Dr. Zabner, which will put pressure on the completion of the report, we actually proceed with what we have done, and if we can then ask the team working on the report, the BRRR report, if they will just look at the Dr. Zabner annual report as well as whatever they have presented and include that, the sooner we can have a copy of the draft report and members can make input, the better. So that if we must submit by Tuesday, it means as a committee, we must have support for the contents of the report by Friday almost. So my concern is just, how are we going to fit that in? If we have to submit, or must it only go in on Tuesday? Must it be in the Speaker's office on Tuesday, or can we conclude on Tuesday and then submit?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what you're saying. It's you and Honorable Shin, who are members of the previous, with that legacy knowledge to assist us.
I don't support that idea. I think that, you know, we will be then forming our own opinion on Dr. Zedna without them having the opportunity to respond and explain themselves, and I think that will be unfair to them. And I think that what you can do is you can prepare most of the report, and you know, it's a small entity, you know, it'll take about a page or two. And I think if you can engage with them on Thursday afternoon, and it won't, I mean, we're sitting down to discuss the report on Tuesday. So it gives us enough time to put in their responses and stuff for that.
Chair, I note what Honourable Shin is saying. Unfortunately, you know, some of us also have other responsibilities with other committees, and I'm now leaving for higher education, so I will not be here on Thursday. Thank you.
I'm not how you do things, Shin. Hey, where can my team? How does that do that?
I'm so
nasty.
The mic wasn't on.
Ah, you should have seen yourself. How far
I'm
I'm not sure.
I hope there's no footage of that. Okay. Honourable Member, I have that proposal, so is it rejected, the proposal that is in the table?
What you can do if Jake wants to get busy with the bulk of the committee report is circulate that in advance, and then we can add in dot that later. I think that was yours. That's a sensible suggestion. So we can engage with the bulk of the report, and then even if it's an hour that we need to take just to look at dot that at the end of the process, that would make it much quicker. Thank you, Chair.
So it's
not
for an hour. No, the suggestion is that we proceed on Thursday with Dr. Edna, even if it's an hour, just to make sure that you are able to clarify the issues that we have. But what the team must do is clear the air in terms of the report. Make sure that the draft report is ready, all what is outstanding, and I think we should, all what is outstanding of Dr. Edna. If that's the case, then maybe by Thursday afternoon. But if you take an hour from 2 until 3, and then by close of business Thursday, we should have something. Or by Friday. Okay. We say Friday. Yeah. So that we look at it and all that and in between. If I can get it before I get into the flight, then I'll look at it. No, it's not even first class. You don't quite, no parliament does first class. Is it? No, it's just for me business. I mean, not business class, first class is something else. I've never experienced this class in my life. So that's what we can do. Looking at Honorable Sotis, he was going to have his trade in this. But I'll do the content of the report because I've been here to make sure that the content is quality, we are fine and all that, and we finish properly. The other issue I wanted to raise, next week Tuesday, then we need, I think we'll have to have almost everybody for the adoption of the report. But what we can do, when we get the report, let's go through it over weekend, and then Monday we submit back. Is that fine, colleagues?
Yeah,
so that the team can incorporate your comments. You get the comments and everything, so that at least by Tuesday, what you go through is what you are seeing it for the second time, not for the first time, and all that, and it has incorporated the comments. And I don't think it will take long. Then the other thing for Tuesday is that there is the team that came to upload the committee stuff on our laptop, on our gadgets, tablets and all that. They would like to do just a 15-minute demonstration on how that system works. Fortunately, I've been through it because I'm in the ICT focus group, which was before you joined us on our meetings. So at least I understand it's a quite good system. Once we have it up and running, we would not even battle with documents, because all what Hajira will have to do is to go in there, upload the documents, anything you want, minutes, everything will be sitting there under your committees that you belong to, listed with all the information. So they just want to demonstrate how it works, how useful it is. It will take about 15 minutes. So we've set that up for Tuesday immediately after you finish with the committee report. So that's fine. Okay, members. I think that's. Thank you very much.
Enjoy Geneva.
I will try to do this.
I will try to do this.